You're listening to OTR-FM. The following is an encore presentation.
Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Hump day!
It's a Friday night. Where's the Jeep tequila?
Like a lady, Donica Knight. Hello, darling. How are you?
Hey there. Ooh, I like that you said darling. You're talking my language.
That's as far as it's going to go because I don't know what it is. Hold on. I know y'all. That's it.
Well, that's all you need is darling and y'all. Just call everybody y'all darling.
There you go. It works out. Now, you're born and raised from Alabama, right?
I am. I have had the privilege to be born in the wonderful state of Alabama. and I love it, and I'm proud of it. We're great, and I know Canada's great. So, hey, all you Canadians.
There you go. Have you ever been up here in Canada?
You know, I did once. I was in high school. I went up there just for a few days. It was like 3 days for a church choir.
Oh, okay. Nice, nice.
And we had a blast. And I will say one thing that I found in Canada was something that I used to love, and we don't have it anymore in Alabama. And that was the snack called Dunkaroos.
Oh, yes. The little snack cookies that you dunk into, like chocolate or vanilla icing.
Yes. Y'all had Dunkaroos. And I went cuckoo crazy, and I bought like 8 boxes of Dunkaroos, and I was all jacked up on sugar, jumped around like a kangaroo. But word in my camp that I was staying in was that Donica found Dunkaroos, and she bought all of them that were at the grocery store. So everybody was coming over to my room stealing my Dunkaroos. And so my happy camper turned into, a, why the heck are you stealing my Dunkaroos?
Well, I got to say, if you want, give me your mailing address when we're off the air, and I'll ship you some Dunkaroos.
Are you serious?
I swear to God, that will be my thank you for being on the show.
Oh, my heavens. Wow.
All right.
Yes, I definitely will. All you right. have missed. You made my month. I know I went to Hawaii, but forget that. There's Dunkaroos coming.
Yeah, you know what? You went to Hawaii last month in October, and I'm going through your pictures. You're on Facebook here, and you are not only just a great singer and entertainer, and you're kind of not like the girly girl. You're like right down in there. You're swimming with the sharks. You're a zip line. You're right down and dirty, girl.
I am. I have an older brother. And so I wanted to be like him, and I wanted to hang out with him. So I did all the sports. I played baseball with the guys and made the all-star team. So I was definitely the girl that had pigtails that everybody was afraid of to have on their team because I would whip people when it came to sports, or they wanted me. It depends on what they wanted. If they wanted to win, let's get the chick with the braids named Donica that's playing on this guy sports team.
That's funny. Speaking with Donica Knight here, and just released on iTunes and available now worldwide, the latest single is Love Ain't a Prize. Before the break, I'm going to talk about that song in a second, but before the break, we heard Acting Like a Lady, and I got to say, I'm a horn guy. I love horns, and the horns in the music, even the first few beats into the song. Oh, it's just great. Like, it's got country and blues and rock all mixed into one with horns.
I'm so glad you played that. So Acting Like a Lady and the whole EP, that comes out in January. So everybody that heard it got a little special glimpse of what's to come. I love horns as well. So I'm a horn lady, like you're a horn man. And I love saxophone.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to have each track that you're going to hear has something special, has a special instrument that I love and that my heart just beats to hear. And Act Like a Lady had my favorite saxophone. And so I was pumped. This guy named Ron, he was the saxophone player, and he was just, he whipped balls to the wall. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can. You can say it, darling.
And I said, oh, my gosh, you're acting like a – I said, go acting like a lady and go crazy. And he just – he blew my mind away when he was playing that saxophone. And he only had to do a couple of takes because he nailed it.
Yeah, it sounds so good.
And practically that last track that he did, I said, just go crazy. And we used all of those for the track, and it was just – I'm so proud. And thank you for playing Acting Like a Lady. I hope everybody likes it as much as I do.
Oh, no. Hopefully they like it as much as I do, because I just fell in love with it listening to it. The website is DonicaKnight.com, DonicaKnight.com. This is the first time I've ever heard, and I love your name, but I never actually ever heard a name before called Donica. I know your parents.
Yeah.
How'd your parents come up with that? What origin?
I'm so glad that you spelled it, because it is a funky name, and a lot of people haven't heard the name Donica before. And my father's name is Don, so I was named after my father, Don Aka. And so it's spelled kind of like Monica with a D.
All right, yeah.
And it's really cool. Our family has a tradition that all of our initials are D-E-K. And so when my parents found out that they were having a girl, it had to start with a D, and so they came up with a whole bunch of different names. And a stranger actually came up with the name Donica, and they just loved it. And I'm so glad that that's my name. And so I was named after a stranger and my father.
Well, there you go. As long as your father's not the stranger, then it's all perfect. But anyways.
He is not the stranger. But it's kind of cool. It means morning star.
Oh, really?
I think that's pretty neat.
Nice. Well, you know, it's neat because also it's a name you don't hear before, so it resonates and stays with you kind of deal. So it's not like a regular, like, Joe. Like, I mean, how many people are named Joe that you maybe know or whatever else, and it's just another Joe. So, but Donica's different and unique, so it's rememberable. And that's what I find with your music and how you do. You're a memorable artist, so it relates very well.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Joe.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, you have performed with tons of different music artists. I mean, like from Kenny Rogers you opened up for, and Scotty McCreery, and Lynyrd Skynyrd, and so much. I mean, do you wonder, like sometimes when I talk with people like yourself and other celebrities, I just can't fathom, like, I'm doing this. Like, do you go through that as well?
I do. I go through that. Especially because in life, everybody's so goal-oriented, and you have this ultimate goal that you want to reach. And a lot of times, I have to just sit back and reflect on my year and things that I've accomplished. And I'm just so grateful for every opportunity and every gift that I've opened in this music business. And this is kind of a neat fact. So before I started doing original music, I started off in the cover band circuit. And then I realized, like, it wasn't fulfilling to me in that I enjoyed performing, but I had to perform my own music that I wrote, or that was my original music.
Right.
And so I had several shows under my belt, okay, being from the cover circuit. And my first original show was before the legendary Kenny Rogers.
Uh-huh.
And it just blew my mind that the very first time that I'm coming out singing songs that I wrote, and that this is me, and this is what I want to say. It was before Kenny Rogers, and I've just been so lucky.
That's awesome. And is there anyone that you haven't yet performed or opened for or with, and that you want to?
Absolutely. I may have opened up for several folks, but there's a lot of amazing talents out in the world. And I'm a big Bonnie Raitt fan. I'm a big Shania Twain fan. I love Adele. I hear she's coming out with a new record. But I would love to open up for Shania Twain, and if I could ever go on a tour with her, I think I would tinkle my britches.
Well, then if she's listening, give Donica Knight, give her people a call and get on the blower there.
She is Canadian.
Yes.
She is Canadian.
She is, so there you go. Now, just a month away, I know, to Christmas, there's Thanksgiving and that, and I know you're promoting not only this song, but the other song that we just heard, Acting Like a Lady, that's coming out in January, but... And I know you just came back from vacation, but is there any little downtime for yourself to have with Thanksgiving and Christmas with the family or whatever? And how do you guys celebrate Christmas?
Yeah. Well, I will be celebrating Christmas with my family. Thanksgiving, that's up in the air because I plan to be in Los Angeles and my whole family will be in Alabama. So we'll be figuring that out. But I was unable to be with my family last Thanksgiving, which is... so sad because I love the holidays with my fam jam. But for Christmas, we wake up in the morning and Mr. Santa Claus still visits sometimes. And for some reason, my dog is a really good present wrapper.
Oh.
And he knows My puppy dog knows exactly what everybody in the family likes for Christmas. And I don't know how he does it, but somehow he goes to stores and purchases things and puts it underneath the tree.
He gets so help gets help from Santa Paws, but anyways.
Yeah. And
not Santa Claus, Santa Paws, but anyways, yeah.
We have our special time in the morning for Christmas, and then we all get together for a big lunch and hang out all day and watch TV, play cards, and just talk about what happened over the last time that we had seen each other and plan for our next visit. And it's just such a special time when we get our family together. And I love Christmas and I love holidays.
I'm
looking forward to it.
Are you the only one that's musical in the family, or is the other family members musical too?
Grandfather on my mother's side. I really didn't get to know him, but I hear that he was very musical. He passed away with Alzheimer's, and when I was super young is when he got it. And he actually lived with Alzheimer's for a long time because he was in good shape, but his mind wasn't fully there. And so, but I hear he was a great ukulele player and had a beautiful voice. So maybe it came from him.
Nice, nice. Well, you have to check out Donica Knight. Her website, again, is donicaknight.com, DonicaKnight.com. Again, the latest single that just came out is Love Ain't a Prize, which we're going to hear right now. And Donica, we wish you all the continued success and the best. And you got to come up here in Canada sometime again.
I will, because my producer, the guy that produced this EP and Love Ain't a Prize and the Acting Like a Lady that y'all heard earlier, he's Canadian.
Ah, so there you go.
And so I love Canada, and I can't wait to come on a tour, and I'll definitely let you know, Joe.
All right, yeah, please do. And don't hang up yet, because I'm going to get your address. I'm going to send you Dunkaroos.
Oh, I know I'm not. Implanted to my brain. I'll be stalking you every day asking, where's my Dunkaroos?
All right. Donica Knight here on The Joe Show.
Hello, this is Judy Mann of The Chiffons, and you're listening to The Joe Show.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Eros Evolution is where sexuality and spirituality meets. Join me, clinical sexologist Martha Tara Lee, on Eros Evolution on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, everybody. This is Fee Waybill of The Tubes, and you're listening to The Joe Show.
Welcome back to The Joe Show on OM Times Radio. And, well, this gentleman here has been in the entertainment business writing jokes for over 40 years. He has over 5,400 joke books, and he's just has recently come out with The Worst of the Best Bad Taste Jokes, a whole wide variety. Michael Cayley's with us. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Joe.
The Worst of the Best Bad Taste Jokes. What does that even start with?
Well, I did I just came out with 14 joke books. It's the Hilarious Bad Taste Joke Book Series. I did one book that was the best of the worst of the bad taste jokes. So that's what that one is about. Each joke book has about, how do you Americans say, or Canadians now, we say it has like 220 jokes. And so there's about 3,000 altogether in the whole series. But I took what I thought to be the best bad taste jokes and put them in the worst of the best. So.
And no topic is left untouched. There's like Mexicans and doctors and Arabs and women and Jewish and dirty and gays and lesbians. You insult everyone.
Well, yeah, like I say, we take no prisoners. You know, we just go after them all. I just put one in today, you know, because I'm getting my joke of the day thing done. And just said, you know, I had my yearly checkup today, and, you know, in the middle of it, the dentist put his finger up my ass.
That's great.
Do you think I should change dentists?
No. Well, it's funny how you said, how you couldn't say back in the 70s. I remember an interview we had with Carl Reiner back in the day, and when they were doing the Dick Van Dyke Show, they couldn't even say the word pregnant. That was like the sin word on TV you couldn't say. But nowadays, like fuck this and shit and like all these bad words come out, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, well, actually in those days, was it Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke had to sleep in separate beds,
yeah,
twin beds, you know. Yeah, so, no, I mean, I think it's changed a little bit, just a little, if you watch HBO. Jesus, I don't think nothing is sacred. They do whatever they want. And you know what? My first writing job was for Lenny Bruce. I was just a kid, you know, and, I mean, I loved Lenny. You know, he died shortly after, but not because of me, but... You know, but I'll tell you, I saw what he went through. I mean, he was being crucified by the cops, the courts, you know, because, you know, and believe me, what he was saying wasn't even as bad, you know, I mean, you know, as it is today, the stand-ups, you know, it was absolutely amazing. And he fought, and of course, you know, he had a drug habit too, but that didn't help.
Right.
But you know what? He needed it. With what he was going through, I mean, he needed something. And, you know, and Hollywood didn't come to his aid until, you know, years after he died. They wanted to do the movie, then everybody was his friend. But, I mean, he was like lost in a desert. People didn't want to touch him.
Speaking with Michael Caley, the worst of the best bad taste jokes. Go to badtastebooks.com and you can see the whole collection there. And Michael, you've been a huge part of TV motion picture history over the past 40 years. You've written for The Tonight Show, The Carol Burnett Show, The Dean Martin Comedy Roasts. I can just go on and on. But you yourself really never done stand-up, per se. You've just been behind the scenes writing jokes, right?
Well, true, because I had a philosophy. Nobody throws eggs at the writers. I always, Will Rogers had a great line. He said that, you know, the comic has the toughest job in the world because his option comes up after every joke. And that is so true. You know, I mean, you know, these people are, you know, comics are standing in the dark telling jokes to drunks.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing I always noticed, and I said this, because I had my own comedy clubs in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, the Last Stop Comedy Clubs.
Right. And I've never seen a comic recover after three bad jokes. Three jokes bomb. He's finished. You know, he might as well pack it up. And I don't know why that is. You know, the audience will forgive one joke, possibly two, but he gets three bad ones. It doesn't make any difference how good he is. I mean, I'll tell you something, Joe, what was amazing. When we opened the Laugh Stop in 1976 in Newport Beach, the first act was Robin Williams.
Okay.
The second act was Dave Letterman. The third act, a headliner, was Jay Leno. And nobody heard of any of them.
Wow.
You know, I mean, and it was like, we paid Robin $150 a week. We paid Dave $300, and Jay got $400 because he was the headliner.
Right.
But I was the only one paying. That's what's really started out, because we were the first people to pay, the first club, comedy club, to pay comics, stand-ups, because they were working for free in, you know, in L.A., you know, because they kept telling them, well, you know, you got to work for free because this is your test. Johnny Carson's, you know, talent scouts could walk in while you're up on the stage and you get discovered, which was bullshit. I mean, it could happen. I mean, maybe there was some truth to that. But it was amazing. You know, so if you would have seen, you know, if I had time to remember all the comics who got their start at the Laugh Stop, and it wasn't really their start. I mean, first of all, I paid them, because my dad always said, you can't let a man work for you for free, because then you can't fire him. And he's absolutely right. You know, I mean, I paid them. And then, you know, I could tell them, and we gave them a week's worth of work. They did 12 shows a week. And that's how they learned their craft, because they got to keep doing it over and over again, 2 shows a night, 6-7 nights a week. And in L.A., at the Comedy Store Improv, maybe you got, you know, a couple 5-minute spots. And that's no way to develop an act. It really isn't. But anyway, then they started paying, which I was glad. You know, it was a bitter fight. Do you remember that, the comedy strike in 78, I think it was?
No, I was born in the 80s, so I don't remember that, sadly.
Well, it was a major event in the history of comedy.
Any of these comedians that have come through your doors and performed on your stage that you've communicated through or whatever, I mean, has there ever been an actor or an actress, say, that just blew your mind, where you knew, where when they made it, it was like, wow, like I knew at that start.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I mean, listen, we had Jerry Seinfeld, we had Gallagher, I mean, Elaine Boozler, you know, like I said, Leno and Letterman and all. Although, I mean, I knew it right there. I mean, and Robin was absolutely brilliant. He used to come out after, when he wasn't working, he always drove out to Newport so he could get on the stage in due time, because he couldn't do it in L.A. You know, I mean, so he would come out, break in material. So, you know, we always had a guest spot. We started bringing those in. And I paid them for their gas, even though they weren't booked, because I didn't want them driving out, you know, to Newport for free. Of course, gas was, what, was a buck and a quarter then, if that. but no, I knew, I saw a lot of greats. I really did. But I also saw a lot of self-destructive things. You know, one thing, you know, when I was in the back room, before the comics went out, the comics dressing room, so to say, you know, nobody's funny. The most unfunny people in the world are comics sitting around in a dressing room waiting to go on. I mean, it's just, can't believe it. Then all of a sudden they get on stage and they come alive. It's as if someone, you know, struck them with fairy dust. And that was the thing, because, I mean, I probably hired 500-600 comics. You know, of course, you know, and we did have a tryout night. But I mean, most of the people we put on the marquee, at least I knew, had 15-20 minutes, you know, material, because we wouldn't have hired them if they didn't. But Robin was the only one, because you never knew what his act was. Mm. You know, I mean, he just got up there and he could ad-lib. I mean, he really was great. You know, I did 2 movies. Do you remember?
Yes, if you don't stop, you'll
go blind. And I did the sequel, Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses?
Yes.
We took the best of the dirty jokes, which I'm really an expert on, are the dirty jokes, and we filmed them. No one had ever done that before, and they became the first joke movies. You know, like you know, people were saying, well, you got to have a storyline. I says, wait a minute. You don't need a storyline. Every joke is a storyline. It's got a beginning, middle, and an end. So, I mean, you know, that's how we pulled it off. I mean, it was tough convincing people. But once the movie started playing, I mean,
it did great. It grossed like $50 million or whatever else back in the 70s
and
80s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I say, that was three wives ago.
Right.
But, they did great. And then the video was great. We, you know, I mean, God knows how many millions of rentals there must have been, because they sold over 100,000 video cassettes, you know, in the early 80s through the 92. And, you know, God, like I said, God knows how many rentals that comes out to be. You know, we didn't get paid for the rentals, but, you know, we sold the cassettes. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, how people, because, you know, the jokes, sure, I mean, they weren't original. There is no original joke anymore. You know, there's original lines, comedy lines, but not a full-fledged joke, you know, two Jews go into a bar, you know, or something like that. But they all have a beginning, middle, and end, and we did a great job with it. I mean, and they worked on film. They really did. No one thought they would, but until we put it in front of the first audience, and I mean, we blew them away. People were laughing their asses off, you know, and I'm sitting in the back, you know, just praying, and I was right. You know, that was the first time that someone had done that.
I remember seeing like Joan Rivers' document of her movie there, where she has like filing cabinets and they're all filed with the joke titles and the categories. Now, how do you have your 5,400 books or over 5,400 joke books stashed?
Well, literally, most of them are in boxes, except the joke books I used to put together, you know, this series, because there's a lot of jokes that really don't fit. But what I did was I had to read close to 20,000 joke books to come up with the 3,000 jokes I had. And if you think about it, 20,000 jokes I read to get my 3,000.
Wow.
You know, so, but I enjoyed it. It was a labor of love. I mean, and I've heard most jokes that come around. Very few, you know, come around, you know, go that I haven't heard, because they're all, you know, derivatives of some joke 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, I have a copy of the Joe Miller joke book from the 17th century, which is historically, I believe, the first joke book, you know, that was published. And I mean, but there are jokes in there that I could tell you, you know, I know where it went to, where it is now.
Do you have a favorite joke?
You know what? I couldn't. I mean, I do. I do have one. Okay, I'll tell you this one. This is the thing. Because my mantra is, if we weren't laughing, we'd be crying. That's what I believe that comedy does. You know, because the world, you know, is a very sad place. Comedy brings it in a light. So here's this story. Bad taste, but it's one of the funniest and truest jokes around. Four old Jews are in a home in Miami, and they're sitting around, and they decide to go in on a lottery ticket. They win it, and they win $10 million. So, you know, Isidore, who was, you know, the leader of the group, goes down to the bank, he goes to the lottery thing, gets his ticket, takes it to the bank, and they cash it for him. He says he wants $10 million. So they give it to him in a suitcase. He brings it back to the room where all the guys are standing. He turns around and goes, Moish, there's $2 million for you. You know, Herschel, $2 million for you. You know, Jacob, $2 million for you. $2 million for me, and $2 million for Germany. He goes, what, are you fucking crazy? What do you mean? Why are you giving $2 million to Germany? Guy rolls up his sleeve. Because they gave me the winning number. As sick as that is, That's how funny it is.
That is.
But see, only a Jew could have written that joke. Whoever wrote it, I don't know who did.
Yeah.
But that's my mantra. If we weren't laughing, we'd be crying. And what could be, you know, what could be more, you know, terrible than the Holocaust?
And talking about let's go on a topic here of racism, whatever else. And I know it's huge here in Canada because we are bombarded by your U.S. media. But the stuff that Donald Trump says about Mexicans, and they're not even jokes, but they're freaking hilarious.
No. Yeah, well, he does. I mean, I have a book, you know, the Hilarious Guide to Bad Taste Mexican Jokes is one of the 14. I was very surprised. This Mexican friend of mine read it, and he laughed his ass off. You know, because you know what? It's like they're not really living it. I mean, they are, you know, like looking over and reading the joke. And they know all the fallacies of their race, of the Mexican people. They know all that. I don't have to tell them, but they know what's a laughing point.
Right.
You know, and that's what these jokes are. Like I said, there was no malice in my heart putting these jokes together.
Oh, no. It was all light and fun-hearted and all that stuff for laughter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the key here, they were funny. Period. It makes no difference. I mean, there was a lot I didn't use, but I'm going to use it again. I'm going to come out with a new book because I left a lot out called The Hilarious Guide to Seriously Sick Bad Taste Jokes. I mean, these, you know, because that'll be the 15th book and probably the last one of the series because I didn't want to use them. But my son, you know, after they're all done, he says, well, why did you use this? Why did you use? I said, because it's sick. He said, that's what people want, Dad.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess he's right. So that'll be coming out in a few months, I guess.
Oh, perfect. And this is a great Christmas gift to give out to anyone, really. Just laughter is the best medicine. And
yes, it is.
And the worst of the best bad taste jokes, Michael Caley. The website, again, is badtastebooks.com.
Well, thank you. I said it'll keep a lot of people off the streets when they read it.
Well, it sounds good. Well, again, the website's badtastebooks.com. Michael Caley, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back right after this on The Joe Show on Old Times Radio.
This is Robert Davi, and you're listening to The Joe Show.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Do you want to be a better communicator? Do you want to better connect with the important people in your life? Do you want to enrich your relationships? If so, join me, Matthew Cooper, on the Positive Control System show every Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Om Times Radio. I'll meet you there.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at Om Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. Om Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Join Elliot Jolish, the business therapist, each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Elliot Jolish Hour, as he interviews business experts on your behalf. And you're invited to email your business questions to questions@ecjgroup.com for answers, live, on air, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Elliot Jolish Hour. Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, this is Brian Hyland, and you're listening to The Joe Show.
It was an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini.
Welcome back to The Joe Show on Om Times Radio, and joining us is a country singer. She's been singing all her life, and she's breaking through the country scene with her newest single, which we're going to hear in just a little bit. He only loves me on the dance floor. We'll find out who that is, too. But let's talk right now with Madeline Victoria. Madeline, how are you, darling?
Hi, I'm doing really good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How's Texas down there doing?
Texas is good. It's actually, weather's really nice right now. I'm enjoying it while I can.
Well, yeah. Are you originally from Texas, or are you just down there because of doing shows?
I actually am from here. I've been here all my life. I was born and raised in deep South Texas, so 100% Texan.
Very nice. Well, new single, He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor, just recently, and you must be extremely happy, broke through the national airplay charts.
Yes, I'm super excited. You know, people, you know, that shows people are loving it, and I'm excited. You know, it's been playing here in my little hometown and the radio station down here for a while now, but I'm super happy that it's finally getting out there and more people are listening in.
Yeah, and that's huge because, I mean, on that list, there's like Carrie Underwood and Brad Paisley, and you're right up there. Like, Carrie Underwood is like four or five spots above you.
Yes, I know. It's so surreal. I'm so excited.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, tell me about a little bit about He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor. Is this about some guy, Madeline?
Well, I could tell you that, well, it's first started, I'll get to that right now, but I first wrote this song about 4 years ago, and it did first start off with just an idea about going into all these different dance halls, and this situation happens a lot. But I did continue to finish off this song when I did have at the time, a boyfriend who we loved to dance. So I guess you could say that, you know, finished off the song while I was writing it. We're not together anymore, but that's okay. You know, maybe he really did only love me on the dance floor. I didn't know it then, but I guess that's why. I thought he loved me all around, but no, that's okay. You know, we're good friends still. But the song does, you know, really relate to a lot of girls I see. And even guys, you know, that girl, you know, she only wants to dance with me and then that's it. So I feel like the song is, you know, doing good because it relates to everybody. It's about basically going out and dancing. And, you know, you can also see it as someone who isn't really in a relationship, but someone they just met at the dance hall and that night at a honky-tonk bar or something, you know. So I'm glad people are liking it and can relate and whatnot.
Well, I definitely can't get a woman on the dance floor, and if I do, she starts yelling for help. So, I mean, you're going a lot further than I am. I need a lot of help, but and when I dance, it looks like I'm having a seizure or something, but that's a whole other story. Now, this is a horrible segment, but talk about seizures, special needs kids or whatever, special needs adults and that. You are hugely involved volunteering with yes. Motor training events for special needs and that down there in Texas. So good for you.
Yes, it's something that I've always had, you know, a whole dear in my heart, and not just those organizations. I mean, I'm really involved with them and also the hospitals here in South Texas. I love to go out and during the holiday season because I know that there are children. People don't really always like to think about these things, but, you know, I find this something that's always been in my heart, and I always go during especially Christmas time. People usually with their families, and I do make time, of course, to be with my family, but I also make time to go to the hospitals and sing and also do, I love to crochet, so I make blankets for the babies, and aww. One year, my mom and a couple of my family members helped me make actual teddy bears. We made them from scratch to go take to the children, and I have a little story behind that, too. I was in the hospital, actually, during a holiday when I was younger, and I received a teddy bear that I have still, so that, you know, something, I got to pay it forward kind of thing, and also, I do an event called An Octave Higher Christmas that I do, I try to do every year, and I kind of, not that I couldn't do it last year because of my shows and whatnot, but, you know, it's something that I plan to do in the future even more so, where we get an event, we choose an organization, different one each year, and we have an event for the kids, and we raise money and donate that, so I love doing all that.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. I'd say come on up here to Canada and whatever else, but then you'd freeze and get too cold, and then you'd blame me for taking you to the dance floor because I only really love you on the dance floor, so it wouldn't work out anyways. But speaking with Madeline Victoria, her latest single that's out right now, playing and making it big through the churches, He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor. We're going to hear that in a little bit. You basically have sung your whole life, and you actually did something with Radio Disney Superstars in Dallas and got to open for the Jonas Brothers.
Yes, that was a really great experience. I was about, 15 years old when my parents took me to my first talent search here in Deep South Texas, and they were based, this talent organization was based out of Dallas, Texas, which is about 9 to 10 hours away from my hometown. Texas is huge, you know, for being a state here in the U.S., but, you know, we drove there. First thing, we did classes here in South Texas, and my parents drove me, my sophomore year, going into my junior year, all the way to Dallas. Almost every other weekend or once a month, just to get more training. And from there, I was selected from the Radio Disney Superstars, who had a connection through the organization I was already taking classes with. And I was up there for the summer going into my junior year, and I stayed with a family that was housing me. And I did a lot of events with this group. I learned, you know, I did the singing and the dancing at the same time, and also getting to this awesome show that I had with the Jonas Brothers was just really amazing. They were, especially for when I was a younger girl, being 15, 16 years old, and being able to say that, you know, I had a show with the Jonas Brothers, and especially they were at their peak at that time, and they were doing amazing. So this is a great memory to look back and to talk about.
That's awesome. So that kind of led the first breakthrough of opening up for big stars, and because then, I mean, now you're opening up for Tracy Lawrence and Clay Walker and the Zac Brown Band and Charlie Daniels, and the list goes on and on. And so that was like the first initial breakthrough for you then, kind of, right?
Yes, definitely. That was exactly that. You know, it went from there, and then the next one after that, it was Easton Corbin, I believe, and then after that, it just goes on and on, and I've just been a blessing. So honored to have seen these, to be with these big acts and to learn so much. You know, I'm from such a small town and such a small, it's an area here in Texas that some people don't even know about, and we just, man, just to have that opportunity at this level of my career and to learn so much, it's really preparing me a lot.
What have these artists have said to you? Have you met with them or whatever? Like, I mean, at the venue or behind stage, and do they say anything, give you any words of encouragement or anything else like that, Madeline?
Yes, there has been numerous times where I've had the opportunity to actually talk with them and have a conversation. Sometimes, you know, it's just a hello, or they're a little too busy, we get a picture. But there's been a few that really, you know, made an impact on me. One of them, I don't know if you're familiar, this is my favorite band. They're called the Turnpike Troubadours, and they have been making some noise here in Texas. They sell out their crowd, their shows, and, you know, hope to get up to Canada. That'd be awesome if they got up there. But anyway, talking with the lead singer of that band was really awesome and made an impact on me. And also, I don't know if you know Josh Thompson. Really singer-songwriter, and, you know, his encouraging words for me as well. To just basically, you know, never give up. Zac Brown Band, that was amazing. You know, we didn't really have a long conversation, but he did give me, you know, just a little words of encouragement for that day. Get on up there and show him what you got. You know, he's not a man. He looks like a man of not very many words, but the words that he does say, I believe, are very bold and really made an impact on me. And I could just tell the kind of artist he is and from his songs, and being able to also his whole organization, his group, his agent, I'm not sure. Supposedly he was the one that had to approve of the opening act of that night. And he approved myself. So that's really cool to have that done. And Charlie Daniels was another one who I hold close in my heart, because first of all, growing up listening to him and my uncles loving him and his music, and my family members, and being able to share the stage with him, and also talking with him about another artist from my hometown, Freddie Fender. He played music with him back in the day in Nashville and the Texas Tornadoes. And so getting to know his side of the story of what they did and, you know, how they were as young men, and it's just something that I take to heart and inspires me in everything, in my music and in life. So it was really great.
Madeline Victoria, where can people get in touch with you social media-wise, or check out the next latest thing that you're doing?
Oh, anybody can look me up on Facebook. You could just type in Madeline Victoria, or Twitter, Instagram, all the social media outlets. You can also Google me, and I'll pop up, Madeline Victoria, my website, YouTube, my music videos out there now. So I really appreciate all the support, and I hope everyone likes my stuff.
All right, and we're going to hear your stuff right now. He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor, Madeline Victoria, on the Joe Show. Thank you very much for being with us, eh?
Oh, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it, and thank everyone for listening.
Looking for a good time. It's been a long week and he's on my mind. I won't give in. Lord knows it's a sin, but this whiskey should do the trick. He only loves me.
Expand your soul. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hey ladies, do you want to have that good hair day feeling all the time? Gentlemen, would you want your special someone to have that glow, letting you know she's feeling completely satisfied? This feeling and that glow can be yours by embracing your sexual power. So join me, Rachel Kenley, award-winning romance author, on The O-Spot. The O-Spot will guide you to that peak with guest interviews, book discussions, and conversations on the thrills of sexual empowerment. Put the zing back in your life. Come up and see me sometime on The O-Spot, live on Hump Day at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Are you ready to shift your energy, consciousness, and limiting beliefs? Join me, Shefali Burns, every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern on Shifting with Shefali here on OM Times Radio. Shift the blocks, limitations, and negative energies that have kept you from experiencing a life filled with joy, peace, love, abundance, and happiness. Are you ready to shift with Shefali? Are you ready to shine your brilliance?
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Poetry.
Hi, everybody. This is Johnny Tillotson, and I love The Joe Show.
And it keeps right on a hurting.
Well, that hour flew by fast, and I want to thank our guests for this show. Again, special thank you to Michael Cayley, Madeline Victoria, and Donica Knight. Also want to wish all of you Americans a happy Thanksgiving, and to the Canadians going down to the States, Black Friday shopping, or you're shopping in Canada, because we have that now here in the country too. Please be safe, even Americans. Don't go crazy, all right? We will see you next week. My gosh, it'll be December already. Have a great one. And remember, don't be ordinary. Be extraordinary.